more. Our population is about 540,000 people, so we're not very big. So they're not very large, as you say. But half the population of the entire province, including Labrador, is on that Avalon Peninsula, right down there in the bottom, to the extreme right. And when you come into the city of St. John's, which is on the extreme east coast, you'd be able to go to a point called Point Cape Spear, sorry, my senior boat, Cape Spear, which is the most easterly point on the mainland of North America. So we are very strategic, and I hope you don't put our little province alongside of the sinking of the Titanic, but of course that's exactly what happened. The icebergs were there, and the rest is history. Very quickly, the work began in Newfoundland, Labrador, really back almost 100 years ago. There were several brethren that came across from Nova Scotia, I think it was in the 1920s. So that's exactly where we are, 100 years ago. And they had some meetings on the Avalon Peninsula, the extreme right east coast. They had a number of different meetings. They found people that were willing to listen. There was some blessing. But despite the fact that they intended to return, they never did. They never did. And so the island was really left in those days until about 1946. There's a man by the name of Mr. Herb Harris, who's certainly a very well-known name in Ontario, and of course in Newfoundland, Labrador. He was having gospel series in Prince Edward Island. Now that's of course the little island to the west of Newfoundland, Labrador, and he became very, very sick. And so during his illness, during his convalescence, he became interested, not just interested, he became exercised and burdened about Newfoundland. He says, we've got to go there. And so in 1946, he, along with a number of other brethren, several other brethren, whose names you likely don't know, he pitched a tent in the Carbonear area. That's on Conception Bay. And he had some meetings there. There was the area of freshwater and so on. Souls were saved. And in 1944, the assembly was planted in 1946. And the very same summer, those that Mr. Harris and Doug Howard and some of the other ones came to St. John's and pitched a tent there, 1946. And there's a number of different stories and some very marked lessons of those days. And within 2 years, the little assembly was planted in St. John's. Small, just a few believers, and the work struggled there. And after that, they went to the west coast of the island, okay? And had some meetings in a place called Corner Brook, a very picturesque place. And in 1955, I mention that because it was a turning point, 1955, Mr. Harris, along with a number of other younger men, they said, we're going to have some meetings in Curlie, a place called Curlie, which is right alongside of Corner Brook. And there was a lot of hype in the brethren's minds because God was going to work and do a great work in Curlie. Well, the result was, sadly, it was a dismal flop. A dismal flop. And dear Mr. Harris, he was a bachelor and a very unique servant of the Lord, he went to his hotel room and put his face to the wall and literally refused to come out. He was absolutely discouraged. He was at the bottom of the barrel because his aspirations and his expectations had been shattered. But I won't go into all the details. But he came out of that room finally, and he says, boys, he says, I'm going to go on a trip around the island. During those days, in the 1950s, most of the outlying areas were only accessible by boat. And there were coastal ferries or coastal steamers, freighters that would bring the supplies in and carry people along. And so he got aboard one of those coastal boats and he went around the island, up to the Northern Peninsula, down the East Coast, and right back to Corner Brook. And when he got back to Corner Brook, he said to those fellows, he says, "Boys, we've got to get a boat. We've got to get a boat." Of course, they didn't have a lot of money. And that's another story. But in time, they were able to get a little ship to shore. I call it a cabin cruiser, but it was a vessel called the MGM. That was its registration name. The MGM was actually owned by a Christian in Bucky, Scotland. And they were able to buy that boat, bring it across, and they kept the registration names and they renamed it the MGM, the Missionary Gospel Messenger. And that was the beginning in 1956 of the boat work. And of course, that's another chapter, a very interesting chapter in the work of Newfoundland. They went to Labrador, they went to the Quebec North Shore, they went to various places on the East Coast and the Central Park. It was slow and tedious, but God used the entrance of that little boat with the messengers aboard to convey gospel truth. Now, there was opposition. And if you go to Lancelot, Labrador, they will tell you of the time that the little boat came into the harbor, Lanseclair. And there were some men that were very, very determined to get these men to leave. And one man, I think he had a bit of drink, he got his shotgun out and he rowed out into a little rowboat and he started firing shots at the loudspeaker. Well, of course, men were speaking. The loudspeaker was over top. And, they soon brought the meeting to a close because bullets or shells were going everywhere. Well, opposition was real. And yet, in those days, God did a very, very wonderful work. And at the end of 1956, a young man by the name of George Campbell, and if you've never heard of his name, he was able to, some of the brethren were able to put a book together. Take the Challenge is the name of the book. It's a story of his life. It's a story of his work. And it's exactly what the book suggests. Take the Challenge. It was a desire to stir young men and young women to take the challenge to live their life for their Lord. And that's exactly what he did. At the end of 1956, as they were making their way along the Labrador coast, Mr. Harris turned to George, and George says, he was from California, by the way. He said, "I think I'll just have to go back to California." Mr. Harris says, "Well, George, it's up to you." But he says, if I was a young man, I would go back to Labrador. Now, George Campbell was only saved about 5 years. He hadn't grown up in a Christian home. But here was a young man, that said, "I want to do something for the Lord." And at the end of that summer, George Campbell, with one suitcase, not like what we had when we came here, one suitcase, a box of Bibles and a box of tracts, took the final coastal boat to Labrador before freeze-up. No returns. And he began to preach, and God began to work. And within several years, there was an assembly planted in English Point, Fort Hope, Lancelot, Red Bay, Charlottetown, and the work has continued to thrive in those places. If you can get the book, Take the Challenge, it's worth reading. It's very hands-on, very applicable to all of our lives. But by the late 1960s, early 1970s, roads had been punched in to the various outlying areas. Now, there were certainly roads across the island, but going up the Northern Peninsula, there were no roads, and in various other parts of the Central Park, there were no roads. But roads were being punched in, and so the boat work, which is very slow, very tedious, very expensive, very iffy in some ways, began to be altered. And then, of course, we began to use tents. And then we thought, we needed some transportation, so we bought school buses. And the result, of course, is that the work expanded and really began to thrive in a very, very different way. And so in 1974, as I've already mentioned, I was able to come for the 6 weeks, so I thought, and at the end of that, they asked me if I would be willing to come on, stay on. Now, when I look back, you can go to the next slide, brother. Okay, this was the first job I received when I came. That previous winter, the brethren had gone into the woods, had cut some logs, and they didn't have a lot of money, but they had a lot of lumber around. And of course, we needed a building, and so they had gone into the woods that previous winter, cut some logs, and this was the month of June, early July, and so I was given one of the tasks. I was there to help roll up the logs, put them on the wagon, and bring them to the sawmill. One of the brethren was a sawyer, and they had rigged up the sawmill. You can get the next slide. That'll show that. So here is Brother Carl Payne. He's the man that's pushing the logs through and in the open air. So there was an awful lot of activity. Sawdust going everywhere, 2x4s, 2x6s, 1-inch lumber, all coming off the sawmill. And it was a very, very busy time. But it was made me aware that God was doing a work. The tent had gone there in 1973. And by 1974, there were a very large number of individuals that had been saved by the grace of God. And so in time, I think there was a picture later on, there was a baptism. And then we had another tech series. This is just part of the children's work there. They're in the Fredericton tent just up the road from Gander Bay. You can keep on going, brother. Okay, there's some of the crew. I won't mention the names because they won't mean too much to you. But Bert Joyce is on the left, if you know Bert Joyce's name. So that was the Fredericton tent. And at the end of that tent series, we came back. Next slide. We had some children's meetings in Gander Bay itself. And these are some of the young people, young people that were there at that time that were able to have, I think, a week of children's meetings. Then after that, next slide. Good. Okay. There was a baptism. And this was a very, very interesting time, a very meaningful time for me, because I'd grown up with the understanding of what baptism was. But when the gospel came to Gander Bay, that was the central part of the island, a lot of those people, number one, had never heard the gospel, and number two, had never really understood or even heard of baptism. And so there were believers that stepped into the waters of Gander Bay that had never been baptized or never seen baptism, let alone really understand. I mean, the truth had been conveyed to them, there had been ministry meetings. But there were individuals that stepped up at a tremendous cost to them. Because in our part of the world, at least at that time, if you identified with Christ, you received the Savior, and then you step into the waters of baptism, number one, your names will be taken off the church roll. And then, of course, they say, well, who's going to bury you? And who's going to marry you? And, of course, these believers didn't really have the answer, because we didn't even have a cemetery at that time. But in obedience to their Lord, they stepped into the waters of baptism. And at that time, there were 34 believers that were baptized in Gander Bay. Within another week, I think another 2 weeks, there was another baptism of perhaps 8 that were added. And in the month of September of 1974, after 1 year of work, there was an assembly of 30 local believers that gathered in the name of the Lord Jesus and identified with him. It was a thrilling time, it really was. And I was just able to have a little part in that. I was only saved 3 years myself. Some of the other workers were involved in other areas. And so I was there in Gander Bay. And basically, I was just a Webster's dictionary. We'd have a Bible reading. And they said, Mark, what does this word mean? And what does this word mean? And what does this word mean? Well, I didn't have a lot of Bible knowledge myself. I just tried to We just try to understand and learn the scriptures piece by piece, verse by verse, word by word. And it was a very, very wonderful time to see the evidence of God's grace and the desire for God's word. I've gone into homes, and there was dear Will Danner, couldn't read when he heard the gospel. And I would come to those homes, and his wife would be going there, and he'd have his finger on the Bible, and he'd have one word at a time, trying to learn to read the Bible. Well, that was the evidence of God's grace, and the baptism was part of that as well. So, in September of 1974, there was an assembly planted of 30 individuals, 30 believers, and it was the start of that work. Next slide. This was a group construction effort. We needed a building to actually have meetings in. And so there was a portable building that was put together. It took us a week to do it. And there was brethren that came from different parts of the West Coast, from Calgary and Edmonton and so on, to help us in the work. I think there was about 25 of us that worked all week. And on the next Sunday morning, we were able to meet in that new building, just a portable hall, 24 by 40. And that was the residence, that was the place where the assembly met for several years. Now, I just mentioned this, and I think I mentioned this the other day, that at the end of 1974, the assembly was planted. 1975, the Christian says, you know, we'd like to have a conference. We'd like to have a conference. So I said, well, yeah, we want to have a three-day conference. We didn't start small. This was on the Victoria Day weekend, holiday weekend, just like you have here. And so we got together. We had made some benches out of 1x3, out of slats. And we just thought, you know, we should try to fix the hall up a bit. And so one of the brethren went into Gagger, 30 miles away, went to the hardware store, I don't know what you call it here, but the hardware store, bought a number of gallons of used paint, you know, paint that just wasn't mixed right. And he came back with about 3 or 4 gallons of paint. He put them in a big pot, and out came a very, very lovely turquoise color. And so before the conference, we were painting these benches, turquoise color. And they looked great, they really did. But there was a problem. Didn't all dry. And, you know, sadly, some of the Christians went home with some turquoise on their suits and on their dresses. But you know, that was one assembly, or that was one conference that really left its mark. Well, it was a great time. It's a great time. Brother Dave Jones was from Chile. He had come to be a part of that conference. And I still remember this to me was very, very interesting. He got up on Friday night and he said to the believers, they were all new believers, he says, now tomorrow when you come, I want you to bring a rake. Don't bring a shovel, don't bring a spade, I don't know what you call it here, don't bring a shovel, bring a rake along. And everyone thought, what is he talking about? You see, he says, when you have a rake, you're raking everything into yourself. When you use a shovel, you pitch it over your shoulder behind you. And he says, you know, when it comes to the Word of God, you need to have a rake to bring it into yourself, to make it your own, to understand what God is saying to you. Because if you have a shovel, if you have a spade, hear the truth and you pitch it to somebody else, you say, I hope he's listening, it's for them. But no, he says, bring a rake along. And I just thought, you know, that's good advice, isn't it? That when you come to a conference, look to see what God is going to say to you. Well, the work continues. Next slide. These are just some of the scenery of Newfoundland, Labrador. This is actually Fogo Island, which is just a very small island, but it's a small assembly now, north of Gander Bay. That was 1974. There was extreme ice conditions. And when we looked over the Atlantic, there were icebergs everywhere. It was a very, very cold summer. But it was very, very interesting because the icebergs were foundering. And sometimes as you were watching it, you'd hear this clap of thunder. And then you see the iceberg going down beneath the surface and then come up in two parts. It had been severed. It had foundered. And of course, that was a very unusual sound for me. But the horizon was filled with the evidence of ice and icebergs and ice floes. That's Fogo Island, next picture. That's Back Cove. That's where some of the baptisms took place. There in Fogo, Brother Brian Funsell was very instrumental in that work. And of course, that's another story. Keep going, brother. We use portable buildings. This is only just part of one half of the building. We use portable buildings in the areas that we were going into. The work was thriving, was booming. In the 1970s, there were five assemblies that were planted. In fact, I've often thought we couldn't get to the areas fast enough. And so we'd have these portable buildings that we haul behind buses, and find a place to rent, be able to put them in, and bring the two halves together. And so that was part of the work of those days. All right, brother, next picture. This is another portable building that Brother John Procopi and I had built in Mr. Goff's backyard. This is going to be going to the West Coast. Okay, next picture. This is the New Harbor Hall. See the portable building in the foreground. The main building is at the back there with the men on the roof. And in those days, we spent weeks and months in construction, building, and putting boards together. It was a very, very busy time. And it was a very, very wonderful time to help the local believers. Okay, Part of the work now, I'm going to the Labrador now, or it's northern Newfoundland. Part of the work in northern Newfoundland, Labrador, involved the airplane work. Brother Bert Joyce realized that there were areas that they could not access apart from an airplane, and so they was able to buy an airplane and use it, put skis on in the wintertime, and this is actually Wallace Buckle's little super cub that he used. Next picture. This is the area of Charlottetown, Labrador. You'd hear planes any time of the day and night that would be coming in, landing on the ice, bringing the supplies, taking passengers out, and a very, very interesting way of traveling. Next slide. The work enjoyed a lot of workers in those days. You'd be able to count that there were 11 workers in those days. It was evidence of what God was doing. And I can say that it was a very, very wonderful time because this was a team effort. And every year we'd meet together for a day or two of prayer, a day or two of talking about the work, of planning, where do you intend to spend the summer? You have enough help? Well, how can we minister to you? And so these were 11 men. Most of them are home in heaven now. But we would meet together. This is actually the corner of a call, and it was a great time just to be able to work with older brethren, veterans, pioneers, men that were teachers of the word, and it was a very, very wonderful time. Next picture. Yeah. Okay, this is the Corner Brook area. Just a couple of shots of the topography there. This is Humber River, a beautiful part of the Long Range Mountains. Keep going. This was another of our tents that we used. This is on the North Shore, Bay of Islands, just outside of Corner Brook. I think the next one is the interior of the tent. We came to anticipate that there were hundreds of children that would come. Now, in this particular case, as just mentioned, time is going. We visited one afternoon, there were about eight communities along the single road. And after one afternoon of visiting, and we didn't cover the entire shore, I got into a school bus, 72-passenger school bus at one end, and Mr. Goff went from the tent to the next community. And after one afternoon of visiting, we started the children's meetings with 200 children and went up from there. I must say, it spoiled me because I assumed that it would always be like this. You go to the same areas today, and there's hardly any young people there. Schools have been closed. Things have altered. And yet here, these tents were filled. Every morning we'd have children's meetings. Every day we'd have gospel meetings. And in some places there was a very wonderful response to the word. In other places it was great difficulty. Great difficulty and resistance and a lot of unbelief. This is the portable building that I showed you that they're constructing. We brought it across to the North Shore, and we had this building that we used. Keep going. I should just say, this is George Campbell, George and Mona. If you can get George's book, Take the Challenge. George is a unique man, very wonderful mentor of mine. And he died very young. I think he was 58 years of age, died of pancreatic cancer. And yet here was a young man, fresh from the hand of God, that lived his life to the full for the advance of the gospel and for the upbuilding of God's people. He was unique. He lived and grew up in a home in which there was no Bible, and yet God wonderfully and miraculously saved him. And that's, of course, another story. This is the part of the children's work in that time. This is 1978. Keep going. Okay, this is just the winter scene. Keep going. Just a couple of pictures of the livelihood. There's a lot of fishing in Newfoundland. These are some of the outports, the lobster traps, just some of the coastal scenery there. And that's still very common. You go to these places and they're very scenic. Lots of boats, lots of people, lots of kids. Well, there are some kids, I should say, not too many anymore. Keep going. Yeah. We came to Gander, the work in Gander in 1982. And what we endeavored to do was to have a mall display. Now, we didn't have all the graphics that you have today, which was 44 years ago, but we did the best we could. So we put up these two charts. Today, what's happening? We have the world map, and we have a number of pictures of current events with ribbons to the locations. And then we had the other one, as you can see, tomorrow, what's next? And it was just a display of future events. And it was interesting. There were a good number of people who would come in and would look at the pictures as to what's happening now. And then they would go to the other chart and we'd say, "Do you understand what we're looking at?" They said, "No, we don't." So we'd be able to tell them about what's coming, about the rapture, about the Lord's return, and so on. And so that was a very, very interesting time of sowing the seed. Okay, brother? Another area that we have used, another method, is the open-air drive-in service. This is the first rig that we had made, and we had pulled into an area. We'd preach from this rig, mostly after dark. We'd have loudspeakers, we'd have generators. People would drive in their cars. And it was a very, very meaningful, very interesting time. This is the picture at night. Many times you'd have recorded music, recorded hymns. And then, of course, you had preaching, and sometimes you could preach for an hour. People would stay there. Go on. Okay, this is the city of St. John's. And the St. John's Harbor is a very, very, very interesting, very critical harbor. During World War II, it was a very strategic point for the Allied forces. It's actually like a big sock. And you come in through a very narrow strip. I think the next picture will show you that. You can see that is called the Narrows, a very narrow strip of water that brings you into the harbor. And there were some German submarines in the area, and so they'd actually have a chain link fence throughout underneath the water, guarding the Narrows so the German submarines could not enter the harbor. And that is still a very, very, it's an amazing part. Just to the right of that, there's Signal Hill, where Marconi received the first transatlantic message in 1901. And so this has got some history to it. Next picture, more of the St. John's Harbor. We are getting some cruise ships in. I mean, we had 30 cruise ships this year, which is very, very financially viable. Then several years ago, we were working in the city of St. John's, and the original hall was in a very, it was in a residential area. In fact, you could drive down the street, you'd likely miss it. And it has served the assembly well, but as far as visibility, parking was limited, and so there was a desire, there was an exercise to see if there was anything else available. And again, that's another long story. But wonderfully, a building came into view. This was a 10-year-old building that the Church of England had put together, had spent a lot of money on it, but because of COVID and because of other things, they were finding it financially impossible to maintain. They'd have to take care of the mortgage, they'd have to take care of the minister, they'd have to take care of the organist, they'd have to take care of the choir director, and there weren't enough funds to go around. And so it went up on the real estate market, and we were able to purchase that. It gave us a very, very accessible building. It gave us a very visible building. And from that building, we have been able to try a number of different methods to advance the gospel, to impact that community. There's a very large, this is a sign there going up, off the main road, and keep on going, brother. Yeah. Just mention this, because, boy, time is gone. We have understood that there were opportunities, as there are here. There are opportunities to impact different individuals that are coming in. One of the groups that came just recently were the Ukrainians. Of course, the war of the Ukraine and Russia impacted a lot of them, and so there were plane loads of Ukrainians that were coming. And Barbara said to me one day, she said, "How can we?" Interact with these people. We don't have their language. And so it just mentioned the fact that there was a brother that we knew. He had a tour company, a sightseeing company, and we said that maybe Brent would be willing to take a tour of these people. So we advertised, and within just a minute of going on Facebook, there were 16 places that were filled. We brought them back to the hall and we're showing them the area. We had a cup of tea, we made contact with them, and so later on, then we had a Christmas supper. I think maybe the next Christmas, we had a very large activity of putting Christmas wreaths together. And they could decorate it, and of course that's exactly what they're doing there. That's in the hall, and they're showing off some of the products that they have been put together. Now, Barbara has continued on with the ESL, English as a Second Language, and that's been a very meaningful time as well to not only convey the use of the English language, but to convey the gospel to them. And so they're going through some of the chapters in John's gospel, and these dear people know very little about the Savior, about the gospel. Recently, there's been two Iranian men that have come. They're Muslims, but they are willing to listen to the gospel, to listen to the gospel of John. And so these are opportunities that are coming our way. And I think as believers, we need to keep our eyes open to understand that there are opportunities for the advance of the gospel where you are, where we are. One other thing I should mention is that in 2008, dear Barbara said to me, she said, you know, there's a lot of good messages that are being given, and you hear them once and they're gone. She said, why couldn't we put some of these messages on the radio to convey the gospel further? And, well, that's a good idea. That's a lot of work. You talk about discouragement. Well, the exercise didn't leave her. She talked to another of the brethren there in Kitchener where we were, and John said, oh, that's a good idea. Why don't we do it? And the green light came on. And from 2008 to 2026, 18 years, there has been a radio broadcast that has been spearheaded primarily by Barbara. It's her work. No, she's not preaching. No. But she takes messages from gospel series, from gospel conferences, from ministry meetings. She talks to the brethren, asks them for permission, and then she takes those mostly gospel messages and incorporates them or edits them to the 30-minute limit. Usually it's about 28 minutes. There's an intro, there's a message, the midpoint comes, and the brother who's chairing the broadcast, you're listening to, it's called Anchor Point. You're listening to Anchor Point radio broadcast. And he gives some of the instructions. He want more literature, then the message continues, and then of course there's the final message. Now that exercise has gone coast to coast. And then Brother Pete Smith from Portage, he said, you know, there's a lot of areas in the north among the First Canadians, among the Aboriginals, and they need to hear the gospel. And so there were other stations that were opened up. And they said, you know, down in the West Indies, there are radio stations. And so at this point in time, the gospel message on Anchor Point is going coast to coast down to the West Indies. Now, we're not paying for it. The assemblies of the areas are taking care of the costs. The city of Kitchener, where it started, we're paying $60 a week. And that message is beamed out to about 3 million people. Now, they're not all listening, we know that. But to me, it's one of the biggest gospel meetings that we have. We don't know where the seed is going, but it's just part of the ongoing work of God. Now, my time is gone, I better close. But thanks again for your prayers. Our need is great. We're struggling in this land. The outports have dwindled in size. Assemblies have become small. All of us are getting older. We're all the geriatrics there. And we're in desperate need of revival, to see the hand of God working. And so we really would value your prayers, that God will prosper and visit us again for his glory. Shall I pray?